Welcome to this episode of Focus Points. This is a series intended to help us as a church better understand our Bible as we read through the Bible together this year. We're going to look at one book of the Bible each episode and try to answer one basic question. What do I need to know in order to get more out of reading this book? So, let's get started. So today we're going to be looking at the book of Judges. And Judges is an interesting book. A lot different from any of the other books that we've read so far. Yes, it's still a lot of narrative, but it's interesting, it's depressing, it's discouraging, it is exciting. It's all these different emotions when you read the book of Judges, because you have these great heroes, these men who are doing incredible things, yet at other times these men, these judges, they really do look like bad guys because of what they do just in the next verse. Right after they please God, they do something that they really shouldn't. Now, we don't really know when the book of Judges was written. Most likely, and it would make a lot of sense, it was written during the time of David, because of how often it points ahead to the king, and there's some connections with the life of David in the book of Judges that we'll talk about towards the end of this podcast. But as you go through and you think about the book of Judges, it is interesting that there's no real resolution to the book. You have these accounts at the end of the book of Judges that are extremely depressing and even grotesque and really make your skin crawl when you think about some of the details of what is happening. And you think of through other books of the Bible so far. I mean, Genesis, it ends at the death of Jacob, but even then there's this hope that happens at Jacob's death that, you know, he wants to be buried in the promised land. You have the expectation that things are going to get better. End of Exodus, it ends on this huge, emotional high as God comes down and he dwells in the tabernacle. Or the end of the book of Joshua, you have this great covenant that Joshua makes with the children of Israel that they would keep the law of the Lord. But Judges kind of leaves us without that. You get to the beginning of Judges and things go from bad to worse and from worse to worser or worsest or however you want to slaughter that grammatical progression. And you get to the end and it just gets worse and worse and worse. And there is really no hope or resolution brought into the book. So if that doesn't encourage you to read the book of Judges, I'm not quite sure what is. But it does have an important message, and it does connect very well into Ruth and then into 1 and 2 Samuel that we're going to be reading next after Judges. But Judges has this message, and it's that God delivers and provides despite his people's disobedience. God delivers and provides despite his people's disobedience. And in that sense, Judges is the other side of the coin to the message of Joshua. Joshua is all about God keeping his promise when his people obey, or he keeps his promise through his people's obedience. And Judges is God's keeping his promises, and he's faithful despite his people's unfaithfulness. And when you think of Judges, it really has three parts to the book. You have the first two chapters, kind of gives you a broad overview of what's happening. You have the middle chapters, which is all the stories of the judges. And then you have two stories at the end, which goes from chapter 17 through chapter 21. So you have those three sections, the beginning, the middle, which is the bigger section, and then the end. But not everything is happening in the chronological order. When we get to those two stories at the very end of the book of Judges, those are actually happening before the main body. Those actually happen within the first generation or two of the Israelites being in the land, which means the Holy Spirit is trying to make a theological point by putting these two stories at the end, and we'll get onto that a little bit more at the end of the podcast. So here's a question. Who are these judges? And what are judges anyway? Well, the ministry of judges, there's a political element to it. They were leaders, right? They were warriors. They were sort of like kings, but weren't given that title of a king, or in most cases weren't. So they were politically ministering in the nation of Israel, but there was also a spiritual element to it. So it's kind of like they're half king, half prophet, concerned about the physical well-being, concerned about the spiritual well-being of those people that they were they were ministering to. Yet they really weren't all prophets. Some of them did receive revelation from the Lord. You think of the last judge who we're going to be introduced to in one of the coming books, Samuel. Samuel was a judge and he was a prophet, but that wasn't the same with everyone. For instance, Samson was a judge, but he wasn't necessarily fulfill that prophetic role. And a lot of these judges had very localized ministries, meaning we know just from the chronology of the book and how much time we have to work with from, you know, King David coming in the future and then looking back at the conquest and when that happened, that these judges, a lot of them overlapped each other, but it would be like the judge of the south, and he was fighting the enemies that were in the southern part, and then a few years later, a judge in the north would pop up because the northern tribes are, you know, dealing with oppression and with things that are happening. So you don't think of it as one judge, he died, and the next judge comes. There is an element where they are actually overlapping in time. But the character of these judges, it is just so diverse. You have some very godly men, especially at the beginning, some of these judges and what they were doing. But then you have Ehud, who's a murderer. You have Gideon, who for all the great things that Gideon did and for the great faith that he showed, he really, towards the end, became very vindictive, and he was polygamous, and he led Israel into idolatry. You have Jephthah, and he sacrificed his daughter. You have Samson, and we know what Samson was capable of doing. So the character of the judges, it was very diverse. These weren't necessarily men that we would all want to look up to. Yet the Spirit was upon all of these men. Othniel, in chapter 3, verse 10, Gideon, Jephthah, and Samson. Several times it happens in Samson's life. The Spirit of God came upon him. And you just see that God's grace. He is willing to use people who are very sinful. And when it comes down to it, he uses them because that's all that he has. All that he has to use are sinners. And some of these judges, though, they did something right because Hebrews includes them in the Hall of Faith. Barak and Gideon and Jephthah and Samson. And you look through some of their lives and you're like, how did they get there? Well, they got there the same way that we will one day get to heaven. That's just God's grace working in the lives of sinners. So those were kind of who the judges were and what their office was. When you look through the book of Judges, you basically have two big themes. Man's disobedience and God's faithfulness. Israel is constantly disobeying God in this book. You have eight times the phrase, did evil in the sight of Yahweh. Forsook Yahweh is talked about five times. And the root of all of Israel's problems goes back actually to Joshua. They didn't completely destroy the Canaanites. The Canaanites were allowed to live, and Israel, although God had given them the land, they didn't do the work that was necessary to actually go out and to do and to claim the promises that God has given. It's almost like they got into it and they said, you know what? That's enough. We don't want to work anymore. We feel content with how much we have obeyed God. And God says, no, that's problem number one. Problem number one is you don't obey me completely. If you don't obey completely, it doesn't matter how much you are obeying. There is still disobedience, and that disobedience is going to cause problems. And that's why we have what is known as the judges cycle, where there's rest in the land, and then there's sin in the land, typically idolatry that happens, and then there's enemies that come into the land, and then there's people repenting of it, and then a judge is raised up, and there's this great victory, and then there's rest in the land, and then after rest in the land, then there's sin, and there's judgment, and then we go through this whole cycle over and over and over again. So you have the root of the problem of man's disobedience, which is incomplete obedience. But there's also this great progression of man's disobedience through the book. It starts with intermarriage. Intermarrying with the Canaanites is really what got Israel in trouble. That starts in Judges 3, verse 6. Judges 3, verse 7 talks about idolatry. All right, idolatry could be just worshiping pagan idols, or it could be distorting, you know, the worship of the one true God. That's what Gideon did at the end of his life in Judges 8, verse 27. So there's intermarriage, there's idolatry, there's murder. Abimelech, Gideon's son, he actually goes and kills all of his brothers in order to take, sole judgeship over after his dad passed away. There's human sacrifice, Jephthah, and what he did to his daughter. And there is some debate as far as did he really kill her, did he not? I firmly believe that he did sacrifice his daughter, and that shouldn't surprise us. These men were very flawed, even though that some of them were used mightily of the Lord. Immorality, Samson, enough said, we know what he did. There was a callous disregard for human life. Judges 19, you read of what the Levite and his concubine, and the Levite just gives his concubine over to the men of these men from the tribe of Benjamin to abuse, and she dies because of it, so he just cuts up her body and just sends it across as a message to the rest of the people of Israel. And it's just this disregard for human life that is just amazing. You know, he sees when his concubine is killed, he looks down at her and he just says, "Get up, get up." And you just get the sense that he doesn't care whether she's really dead or alive. It's just horrible, horrible. And then just the widespread endorsement of heinous sins. You get to the end of the book, which is really talking about the beginning of the period of Judges, because of that time difference. You get to the end of the book, and Judges 20, the whole tribe of Benjamin supports the people who murdered that concubine. They say, it doesn't matter what they did. They're part of us. They're part of our family, and we are going to defend them no matter what they did. And that you just look at that and just think, how could a whole tribe be like that? But this is the Judges period. Sin is running rampant, and there is this great progression of sin. It's not just intermarriage. It's not just that first step. It's where are all these things going to eventually end up? So man's disobedience. That's one of the delightful themes you get to trace through the book of Judges. You also have this wonderful theme, and that's God's faithfulness. God is constantly fighting for his people. Over 30 times in the book of Judges, God fights for his people. And God is faithful, and he's going to use anyone who shows even the slightest bit of faithfulness to him. Othniel, Ehud, Deborah, and Barak. You know, even though Barak was a coward, God still used him to win a big fight, even though it was, I forget what her name is, but there was a woman that actually killed Sisera, who Barak was fighting. Gideon, Jephthah, Samson, these men that we've talked before, God is using them. God is faithful. He's still trying to deal with his people, even though they have all these issues. And it's interesting, because in the book of Judges, God is the only person who's actually referred to as a judge. Judges 11, verse 27 tells us that. And so you get the idea that although these people, we would say, judged the people of Israel, none of them were really just. That is God. God is the just judge. And God, as this judge, he is faithful in that he also restores rest to his people. Judges 3:11, verse 30, that same chapter, Judges 5:31, all of this talks about just God's faithfulness to restore rest to the land. So God is still concerned about his people. He's doing things to call them back to himself. He's bringing the judgment, but he's bringing the way out. He's restoring them back into right relationships, and it is just amazing to see at times. You also have God's plan for kingship. This is a big deal, especially towards those latter chapters, where God says, Israel has this problem, and they do not have a king. There was no king at that time. Now, sometimes we come down hard on Israel for saying, hey, you, when you wanted Saul to be your king, and Saul became your king, you shouldn't have asked that. And it was right. It was the wrong time for them to ask for a king, and they asked for the wrong reason. They wanted to be like the other nations. But really, this idea of kingship in Israel was nothing new. Genesis chapter 49, Judah shall have the scepter. That is a sign of a king. God had said way back then, hey, a king is going to be coming. In the law in Deuteronomy, it gives a law for the king. God fully expects and plans his people to have a king. And that idea of having a king brings us to the last topic that I want to talk about the book of Judges, and that is what I would just call the Bethlehem connection. The last two major stories, Judges 17 through 18 and then 19 through 21, they really are the thematic climax of the entire book. Even though the actual stories take place shortly after Joshua's death. You say, well, how do we know that chapter 17 through 21 actually happens, you know, very close to Joshua's death and not after, at the end of the judges of the period of the judges? Well, in the first account, you have this Levite who sanctioned the idol worship for Micah and the Danites. And that Levite, his name is Jonathan. He is actually Moses' grandson. Now, the King James says Manasseh, but that's just another name for Moses, and there's a reason why it's Manasseh's the name given. But it is Moses. And so you have this grandson of Moses as a key character in the first story. So we know that had to happen fairly close to the actual conquest time in Joshua. In the second story at the end of Judges, you have Phinehas, the grandson of Aaron. He was the high priest when Israel went and had their civil war against Benjamin. Judges 20:28 tells us that. So why are these stories that really happened at the beginning of the Judges period, why are they recorded at the end? In other words, why did the Holy Spirit put things out of chronological order? What point is he trying to make? Well, I think there's two points that he's trying to make. First of all, these stories show that from the very beginning, Israel was capable of unspeakable sins because she had no king. In these two stories, four times it talks about Israel not having a king. So that's why they're at the end. Israel, from the very beginning in the land, that needed someone who would be that strong leader and that would lead her to live a godly life. Second, they connect some of Israel's darkest moments to the town of Bethlehem. The Levite, Jonathan, in Judges 17 through 18, was from Bethlehem. And then the concubine from Judges 19 through 21, she was from Bethlehem also. So you have this Bethlehem and this king kind of theme that's running through these last two stories. So Judges 17 through 21 are continually emphasizing Israel's need for a king while associating that need with the town of Bethlehem. And then you finish Judges, and what's the very next book? It's the book of Ruth. And Ruth shows how God providentially worked to give Israel a king from Bethlehem. What's the last word in the book of Ruth? It is David. In Bethlehem, God works providentially to bless and to bring about this the lineage of this king, King David, who would be the man after his own heart. And so between Ruth and the last two stories of Judges, you have this Bethlehem connection, this theme of kingship that kind of comes into play. And I think there's a great analogy that we can draw, which is just as Israel's national issues and judges could only be solved by King David from Bethlehem, the king who would be the king after God's own heart, so our spiritual issues can only be solved by King Jesus from Bethlehem. I think that is a legitimate lesson that we can kind of draw from the Bethlehem connection from Judges 17 through the book of Ruth. Anyway, so as you read the book of Judges, I'd encourage you to look for examples of man's disobedience. It's not too hard to find. It's all over the place. But as you see the darkness of man's sin, see the brightness of God's mercy that he shows, and then just marvel at the faithfulness of God. And I think one of the biggest things we can take away as we read is just this confidence and this love of our God that he will work, and he will work in our lives despite our own shortcomings. And also, as you read through Judges, just look forward to that time when Jesus Christ is going to come and rule. And when our King comes back to rule, everything will be as it should be. So I hope that you receive a great blessing as you read through the book of Judges this year.